The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 31. With just under 16 million visitors, Bangkok became the number one most visited city in the world last year, just edging out London. That's bloody amazing. Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. And I know many of you listening dream about a location-independent lifestyle or dream about living abroad for an extended period of time, whether that be for a gap year, whether that be for a mid-career break, or whether that even be for retirement. And that's why I'm really excited about today's interview with John Bartos from Jet Set Citizen, because John has lived abroad for the last 12 years. He's a location-independent professional, and he's actually even started a company in another country and then sold it. So John gives us some really great advice from someone who is doing it. He talks about the real cost of living abroad and how it can be a lot cheaper, and you can live very well for much less than you probably ever imagined. He also talks about some of his favorite home bases, being a location-independent professional, and he kind of pulls the curtain back a little bit on the myths that surround location independence and living abroad and gives you a little bit of the realities of what you can expect. And then also teaches you, if you do want to still do that, how you can go about doing that and setting yourself up to become location independent or to have an extended break living somewhere abroad. So I'm really excited about today's interview. It's an awesome one. Before we begin, if you haven't already, make sure to sign up for our email newsletter. You can do that from the computer. You can also do it from your smartphone. And that's going to be the best way for you to stay in the loop and know when new podcasts are released and also when new posts are put up on the blog. You can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. And you'll also receive our gift to you, the completely free Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire series. I look forward to having you join the community and the email list. And now let's jump into this great interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who has been living abroad for the last 15 years, has started, owned, and sold a successful business abroad, and has most recently enjoyed becoming location independent. John Bartos from JetSetCitizen.com. John, I know it's early over there in Thailand, so thanks so much for hopping on the line and coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
And John, I've given people just a glimpse of your story in the intro, but really there's a lot more to it. Can you fill people in on the path you've taken over the last decade plus and the important decisions you've made and kind of why you've made them?
Okay. I guess like the first thing was in university. After university, I moved to Japan kind of on really short notice. I kind of bought a ticket and a week later arrived in Japan. And I thought that was going to be like a short little stay and maybe work there for a few months and travel a little bit. But I ended up getting married there and building a business there and spent 13 years in Japan altogether. So that was like, I think in 97, got married a couple of years later and started a school shortly after, or about the same time we started a school. And in Japan, things were going really well. Like the English school we started was doing really well, and we were expanding into some other online related businesses. Did that for a long time, but it kind of reached a plateau, I guess. The work was for the first 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 or 6 years, maybe even, like it was very challenging. There's a lot of new things to do, and it was very exciting. We were growing, but over time, it kind of just kind of lost its interest. Like hiring staff, I realize is not my kind of thing. I don't like managing people. And a lot of like the English teachers that go out, they're not really looking for a career. They just want a temporary place to go. So it wasn't really like you're hiring professional workers. When you build a business and you get all your systems in place and everything's working well, there's not much thinking left. You just kind of have to go through the motions. And so like, and I hated the fact that there was no thinking left anymore. It was doing like, for example, like we would do the same kind of events and same kind of systems and same kind of way to market, and everything was just the same. You just got to say, okay, let's do that same thing we did for the last 4 years. basically that's the way it became. And so it's good because you can improve your quality, but it's just when everything comes like a system and a process, that's what everybody advises to do, is like create systems and processes for your business so you don't have to think about it. But like not thinking about it just destroys all your interest in something, right? I guess we just got really bored doing the same thing over and over again. But like the thing is, the money was good. We had a good lifestyle. We could do what we want. We traveled a lot and we bought whatever we wanted. So in that way, it was hard to leave. So it took a long time to actually make a commitment to give that up, because it was like we had these golden handcuffs tying us to a pretty good lifestyle. We were missing something and needed more. We thought like buying things would maybe solve our problems. Maybe we needed a bigger house. Maybe we needed a newer car. Maybe our espresso machine wasn't fancy enough or whatever. So we bought all the consumer goods and thought that that's what we really needed to have the perfect life. And like a few years of that, and we got everything we wanted, and we realized, no, that wasn't it at all. All that stuff we bought just added extra time and hassles and cleaning and more shopping, and like all that kind of consumer lifestyle that we thought that maybe that was the part missing, didn't bring any meaning or fulfillment. We regret buying the house and doing all that stuff because we wasted lots of money doing that. But at the same time, I think if we didn't do that, we wouldn't have seen it wasn't about the possessions. It wasn't about how much money you have in the bank. It wasn't about how much vacation time. It was really like, if you're not doing, the tagline on my site is, if you're not doing what you want now, then when? But there's a lot of things we wanted to do that we kept putting off. So finally on my website, it was a relatively new blog. Jet Set Citizen was relatively new. I made a 1-year commitment to change countries and careers. So basically my wife and I were just sitting and complaining about like, we still haven't done anything new with our life. So said like, screw it. Okay. I'm going to write it on my blog 1 year from today. So like, I think in 2009, we did that. So basically we wrote that post and said, okay, March 2010, we're going to sell everything and get out of here and start something new. That was kind of the next phase of the lifestyle.
Yeah, and I think there's two really, really important points there. The first is that without having had all that, like you said, it would have been very tough for you to say, I'm going to leave it. Like, it took you to get to that point to say, well, this isn't the answer that we thought it would be. And the other important point is you put it on your site. And I know in my own career and in my own, you know, as I make products and as I develop my site, no, the best thing that I do or have done is I put it out there and said, I'm going to do this. And once you make it public, all of a sudden, not only is it real to you, but it's real to other people. And you have people cheering you on. You have people waiting for whatever you're going to do. So how did that kind of work? I mean, you made it public. After you made it public, were you scared about it? Or was it kind of like, all right, now I've made it public, I'm just going to do it?
Yeah, I think it was like kind of like that. Like before it was like, kind of hesitantly, we kind of said, yeah, we're going to do it. Someday we'll sell the school. But like you can say those things. It's just like someday I'm going to start a business. Someday I'm going to write a book. Someday I'm going to learn a foreign language, right? And you say those things, but you don't really take action towards it. It's just this vague idea in your head that you don't do anything with. But once I declared it and made the post, like I think maybe just the whole process of just like really writing a blog post takes time, because you have to really think through some of the ramifications of what you're writing. And I guess when I finally did that and started going through that process, I realized, yeah, like we got to sell the house, we got to sell the school, we got to get rid of our car, we got to move all our stuff out. Like, and then you have to start thinking, okay, each one of those, what are the steps involved? And basically you start saying, okay, the first step is I got to start advertising it, right? So immediately I put the school up for sale, and then you got to start. Then we start thinking, okay, if we're moving, we don't need to buy anything new. So we stop our shopping and we start thinking about what stuff we can get rid of. And everything starts going in motion, and then it kind of pushes you forward. But before, it was just this vague dream, I think, that most people have for improving their life and never act upon.
Yeah, very true. And then for you, you put it up and you said it's going to be a year, and you successfully did that. Within a year, you moved and you started a new career. Tell us a little bit about how that worked out.
It was like 11 months, I guess. Basically, we were 1 month ahead of schedule, and kind of everything kind of worked. And so giving up something secure for something completely unknown and unforeseen. So like we didn't really know what was going to happen. And we still kind of don't know. It's kind of everything is up for grabs. Yeah, I think this month is 4 years since we sold everything and got rid of everything. So it worked out really well, I think. We're doing what we want, where we want, basically. So I have a lot of family that lives in different parts of the world. So we have a good opportunity to rotate through different places and spend some time with them, which I would never before it was like a short 1 week vacation, but now we can kind of go live in that country and see people and connect with people. So that's been very rewarding as well. And I'm doing a lot more. I got involved in more nonprofit kind of volunteer work, which is also very rewarding. I think a lot of these things that I was missing from my life before, I thought like I was looking for meaning and fulfillment in consumption, the Western ideas of success, and it never came. So it's kind of good. I needed that kind of drastic change to actually open my eyes to what's really out there in the world.
Yeah, and now you're location independent. So let's touch on that a little bit. And you write a lot about location independence, and that used to be a big focus of your blog and interviewing location independent professionals and how they're able to do it. So personally, with you, what are some of the methods or tips that you use to become location independent? Because a lot of people listening to this want to travel more, but one of the things that holds them back, obviously, is, you know, their job or the fact that they don't have a lot of money. With location independence, you can live wherever you want, and hopefully wherever you're living, you're bringing in enough to sustain yourself. So a lot of people want that. How did you do it?
Well, we worked hard and saved money for a long, long time. So money wasn't really that big of a problem. Like I think a lot of people are especially the younger people just out of university, they're desperate to find an income right now. And I think that's the situation where I would say like probably 90% of people are at. It's something like, I don't have a job and I don't have any income coming in and I want to move abroad. Like, how do I do that? That's a pretty tough situation to be in because you're stressed out about making income and you don't know what you're going to do. So like teaching English I still recommend that as a great way for people to get started because it puts you in a foreign country and it gets you a work visa there and it gets you a job and gets you an income. And maybe in some countries you can actually save a little money as well. For example, if you're in Japan or Korea or China or Taiwan, you're pretty close to other countries as well. So it's a great hub for traveling. You don't have much time to travel, but it gives you a chance to at least explore your country you're teaching in. And then from there, you can kind of change your mind and move to different countries in the region or something. Thailand is a good choice too, but like salaries are not quite enough to make you save money, but some people do or all right. Another thing I would say for most people is like if you're doing freelancing work or contract work is to get that work while you're working another job in your home city. Don't start with zero and then start looking for what you're going to do because you're just going to burn through your money quickly and get stressed out. So if you're going to do some type of freelancing work, then start now in your home city and actually do that work. A lot of particularly the newer travelers, the newer people coming, like it's like most of them are not making much money, if any money, right? Like people talk like they're very successful and they're doing really well because it sells more and it makes them look more attractive online. So if you see a blogger talking about how great the lifestyle is, there's a good chance that it's exaggerated quite a bit. So there's lots of digital nomads making like hundreds of dollars a month, not thousands of dollars a month. So I think that's something that most people should be aware of. I think it's not an easy route to riches and the idea that you can follow your passion and write about whatever you want and do whatever you want and get paid huge amounts of money to be an online rock star is a myth. I think what I would say to people is like best way to start is save as much money as you can. The more money you have, it's the longer kind of runway you have to take off. And it's very easy to save money if you're in a developed country. If you have to work an extra job, move back with your parents, or get rid of your car, cut out the cable bill, whatever it is. It's quite easy to save an extra $1,000 or $2,000 a month from what you're doing, just that we get caught up in a lifestyle and we tend to spend about 101% of our income all the time. So if you're doing that, it's not a very good starting point to build a business or do something good. So the first thing I say to people is if you don't have any money in any savings and you have lots of debt, then you're not in a very good position to go abroad because you're just going to be worrying about money right away. So the first thing I would do is just like in 1 year, you could save at least $10,000 and $10,000 is enough to live for a year in Thailand, for example. If you start off with 1 year of living expenses, it's like you have a lot of flexibility. Even if you don't want to start a business online, you can just travel for a year and just keep your costs really low and then just experience things and try things out. So I would say just get your act together and save some money. Work an extra job if you have to. Just cut back your expenses. It's very easy for an American or a Canadian or Australian or a British person to save $1,000 or $2,000 a month nowadays, I think.
Right. And as listeners of this podcast probably already know, I am a proponent, as John said, teaching English abroad. That's how I got my start. I went to Japan. I was teaching for 2 years. during that second year, I wanted to start my own website. So I was making plenty of money teaching in Japan to cover my expenses and my travel and all that. And everything else was fun. You know, I got to start my website. You know, I wanted it to make money, but I didn't have to have it make money right off. And I gave myself a good 8-month cushion before I was leaving Japan to really make it go. And that's quicker than some blogs take off or some websites. But like you said, I started it. Did it as a second job, really, because, you know, it wasn't making me money, but it was a job. And, you know, then I gave myself that cushion. And like you said, I think if you are an American or a Brit or a Canadian or someone who wants to go abroad and you have a job already, yeah, take a year, take half a year even, figure it out, sock away some money. And as John can attest to, and we'll get into it a little later, you can live very, very well for what would be considered a meager amount of money in our Western countries, in different countries like Thailand and stuff like that. So for people who are looking at this location independent lifestyle, John, you kind of gave them the realities of what they should be aware of and that not everyone's a rock star making a ton of money. You've recently been pretty open and honest about wrestling with location independence like you do now and settling down and having more of a routine. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of the location independent lifestyle?
Well, like my wife and I have a pretty consistent lifestyle no matter where we are. I wouldn't really say we're travelers. We try to move to a place and live there as long as we can. So we try to spend like 3 or 4 months in one location if possible. So we like to do things like getting a gym membership and having a stable place to stay and getting a routine quite quickly, because it's, if you're moving around all the time, it's just impossible to get anything done, I think, because you're always thinking about where am I going to stay and how do I get there? And where's the good restaurants, right? And so you're always planning. And if your whole life is spent planning, it's pretty hard to do anything productive. And it's hard to exercise. It's hard to eat healthy. It's hard to do a lot of things. So for us, I wouldn't say we're travelers. We're more of, I don't even know what we would call it. Like, we like living abroad a lot. And we don't have a specific place where we would like to spend 12 months of the year. There's many great places that we'd like to spend 3 or 4 months of the year, which is really nice. So for us, it's about like health is really important to us. So we try to exercise every day and eat healthy every day. And we need access to fresh fruit every day. And we need good restaurants that are healthy or an ability to cook at home, healthy food. And so for us, just getting that routine down is very, very important. And in between, we'll do short little travel stints. But generally, we just want to be in one place in one time for as long as possible.
What are some of the home bases that you've had over the last couple of years then?
One thing is like I have family in Australia, Japan, Thailand, and Hungary, and Canada. So we try to visit all of those people for different lengths of time. But the main one has been Chiang Mai by far. We've returned there for the last 3 winters. And my home city is in Canada. So we've been there for the last 2 summers. And my wife's family where we lived in Japan is in Osaka. So we go back there a few times a year, 2 or 3 times a year anyways. And we spent time in like Turkey and Hungary and different places in Europe. I guess that's about it. Thailand is the main one right now because it's just like Chiang Mai offers a pretty great quality of life very, very inexpensively.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit because you mentioned you spend a lot of time in Chiang Mai, a lot of digital nomads or location independent professionals, whatever you want to call them, spend a lot of time in Chiang Mai. I myself have been to Chiang Mai twice on shorter trips and have loved it. And one of the main reasons is that the lifestyle you can lead is great for what, as we said, would kind of be considered a meager income in comparison to Western standards. Can you give people a little glimpse of your life in Chiang Mai, kind of day to day, and what the costs are associated with it, you're living in Chiang Mai?
The reason we particularly like Chiang Mai is like it has great cafes. The internet is really good, especially for Southeast Asia. There's a lot of good vegetarian restaurants, and we're not really vegetarian, but we try not to eat so much meat anyway. So it's just the choice of food is really good. And Thai food in general is great. Like with all the Thai food is really, really good compared to most countries in the world. It's pretty hard to beat Thai food. And the people are really nice. It's a very safe country, especially Chiang Mai is exceptionally safe, I think. And well, despite the protests in Bangkok and in the south of the country, but like most of the country, even despite all that stuff, it's still very, very safe. And it's very inexpensive as well, too. Like you can get rent for, if you get longer term rents for as little as $100 a month for like a 1-room apartment. Ours is like maybe 160, 170 a month right now with good internet. We stay near our favorite cafe, near our favorite restaurant. We have a gym membership. Gyms are a little more expensive. We pay like, I think, $40 a person or something like that for a gym membership here. Basically, we live on probably like $1,200 a month or something like that as a couple. So per person, it's like maybe $600 a month. And we don't really sacrifice anything. We have everything we want and we go wherever we want and we eat whatever we want. And so it's not like we're scraping by on $1,200. We have a pretty decent life on $1,200.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that. And the two main things I would say, and you could correct me if I'm wrong or add to this, if you will, the two things are substantially cheaper than what we're used to in a Western society is rent, like you said, $160 for an apartment. You know, you can get if you want a house or anything, $300, $400, $500 US a month. Substantially less. And then also the food. I mean, you can eat a meal out for $1 or $2, a very good meal, as you mentioned, out at restaurants, or if you're cooking yourself, it can be also cheap. Is there anything else that I kind of missed on that really makes it so much cheaper?
Well, like, yeah, I think the food is like, you can get like street food for $1 and you go to a nicer restaurant for about $2 a dish. And so like, I would say $3 or $4 a dish is getting quite expensive already. Like maybe if you eat Western food all the time, you could spend that kind of money. But generally it's like you can get one dish for like a couple dollars is probably like about the right amount of money. I think one thing too is like that many people, especially in Canada and America, like the food is so processed and so nowadays. In poorer countries, they still eat real food that's cooked fresh in front of you. I think people don't understand that. In these third world countries, they actually have like real vegetables and real fruits. We don't have those in Canada anymore, right? So not only is it much, much cheaper, it's like much, much higher quality. Like just being able to eat fresh, delicious fruit, not the kind that was picked 3 weeks ago and shipped across the ocean. These are like people chop down bananas in their yard and sell it in front of their house kind of stuff, right? So, and it's dirt cheap. So like that kind of stuff, I think people don't understand. It's like, sure, it's a third world country and maybe the streets are a little messy or things are not as smooth as it could be in a richer Western city. But in many ways, it's so much better. And like, and one thing that I'd really like to emphasize too is the culturally, it's so much richer. People are outside all every evening and there's kiosks, food kiosks all around the city. And you talk to your neighbors and you see your neighbors and you walk by all the shops and you see the same people out every day and people are really friendly. And it's just like, it's, this is how life would have been in a small town like America or Canada, maybe 40 or 50 years ago. And I think we've lost our way in our kind of like with this modern progress that we call it. And so in so many ways, it's just so much culturally richer and better. And I think this is, we have a lot to learn from third world countries rather than teach.
Yeah. And in Chiang Mai, especially, there is a large hub of expats. So I do think that's a great place if someone is location independent or wants kind of a home base, if they have some money socked away and want to travel and wants a home base. I'm a big proponent of Thailand in general, but Chiang Mai specifically, it's a great kind of starting point. You're going to have all the conveniences or most of the conveniences you would have at home, as well as that rich culture, the great food, the good internet. You know, you're not too far off the beaten path, but if you haven't traveled anywhere else before, it will be enough to really rev you up and get your senses going for sure.
And like even things like the local music scene and local art scene, and it's really, really vibrant and rich. So it's like, I think people, I get all these silly questions all the time, like, is it safe to be there? Is it safe to eat the food? And like, what happens if you get sick and blah, blah, blah. And people ask all these kind of questions like they're going to be in the jungle with a machete or something. It's not like that at all. This is like, they have giant shopping malls, unfortunately, and Starbucks and Burger King and McDonald's. And so it's like a very modern place. And all the shopping malls, you couldn't tell if you were in America or if you were in Thailand or if you were in London or wherever, because it's just giant, big Western style shopping malls that are opening up everywhere too, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, but with that, then you do, like you said, the old town of Chiang Mai and the surrounding area, you have that return to 40, 50 years ago in the States and Canada, this homey, towny feel where everyone, not everyone knows everyone, but you know, it is that kind of feel. So other than Chiang Mai, then have there been other places that you've been to that if someone did want to kind of get that feel, they were location independent, they wanted to come and try out living abroad or something. Are there other places that you might suggest, places you've been that kind of give you a similar feel?
Ubud in Bali was quite nice as well. I like Ubud. It's like one thing that's a little scary, and I think most people don't really fully understand the ramifications of as yet is that there are massive increases in travelers all around the world. All these places are not going to be good destinations for much longer. I think like the cheap digital nomad travel is not going to be around for too much longer. Like even in Chiang Mai, you can see like thousands and thousands and thousands of new Chinese tourists, more digital nomad type of backpackers and things. So it's kind of scary. If you're not going to do it now, I'm not sure if in 10 years you're going to have these opportunities to see kind of like authentic places. There might be like Laos or Myanmar might open up to be more closer to Thailand, but I seriously doubt those things. So that's one thing I would really press upon people is like, but the only problem is like encouraging more people to do it now is only going to exasperate the problem. So it's a tough call. Like I can see it's pretty scary. Like Chiang Mai is like, it's coming near its ends because it's just like getting so crowded. You can't even go anywhere anymore because the traffic is so bad and there's so many people everywhere. And it's just like, even my favorite places that I used to recommend everybody, I don't even want to tell them anymore because it's just getting so crowded and it's so hard to go anywhere.
Yeah, it's a fine line for sure between this, you know, encouraging people to get out and travel, which both of us do, because I think that really does help someone expand their mind and really make them a better person overall. But with that, you know, a lot of these places that have become hubs are then slowly turning into more westernized versions of what they were. And so you lose a little bit of that for sure. And you're obviously very adept at saving money when traveling. You talk a lot about on your site of, you know, the cost of living in Thailand and stuff like that. What are some of the best tips you can offer people, whether it's long-term travel, kind of this, I'm going to stay somewhere for a month or two or 3 months, or even if it's a shorter trip, what are some ways that people can save more money when traveling so that they can afford to then do more travel down the road?
I think like after like kind of going through the materialistic phase of my life there, I kind of realized that like more comfort, more convenience, and kind of more luxury makes me a weaker person. So I don't want to eat rich, expensive food because it just makes me kind of like, it's just high calories and it makes me feel lazy and fat basically, right? I don't want a giant TV because it just makes me watch more TV. And so a lot of the things that people think they need in their life that make their life more comfortable and more convenient, they actually make you weaker and lazier. And so like, one thing that I really try to do is just try to keep my life as simple as possible. So it's like for example, we never rent a motorcycle or swim and walk everywhere. And if you walk everywhere, you see more of the city and you connect with the locals more and you kind of just get a feel for your neighborhood more and people, you get to know people much, much more quickly. And so those kind of things, it's like if you eat mostly really simple food, like rice and curries and not have like hamburgers and french fries and all the Western garbage all the time, you're going to feel healthier, you're going to have more energy, and it's much cheaper. So if you can eat like local food and live like a local, you can really, really extend your money. Like there's apartments for like less than $100 a month in many of the kind of Thai style buildings. So if you can get those kind of places, it's quite cheap. And of course, the longer you stay in a place, the cheaper it is too. If you're getting, you're staying in a hotel or a guest house for 3 days and then moving cities and you have to pay for your transportation again, and then you're kind of looking for the restaurants and you might go to an expensive restaurant because you don't know where the restaurants are and things. The faster you move, you could easily spend three times as much money if you're moving around all the time and spending lots on transportation. So like flying is obviously the most expensive thing people are going to do. So if you're flying every couple of weeks to a new country, you're going to spend a lot more money, especially if it's longer distance stuff. Local stuff is actually quite cheap. You can fly to like Kuala Lumpur or Singapore or Saigon for relatively cheap. But if you're going to do the longer stuff, it definitely adds. Like I would say our monthly expenses are probably about $1,200 a month. Travel probably adds an extra $500 or $800 a month on average over the course of a year. So if you're spending half of our budget basically on transportation, it definitely adds up.
Yeah, for sure. The slower you travel, the more your money is going to be worth and the more authentic experience is going to be. Not everyone can do that. We understand that. But yeah, if you are someone who is looking to maybe do long-term travel, I would suggest take it slow. You don't have to see everything at once. If you are thinking about it for the long haul, there'll be plenty of times to jump around and see stuff. And yeah, the slower you travel, the more you're going to save because it's just going to be a lot easier and you're going to know how to make your money work in that certain situation for sure.
Yeah, and if you could get like, for example, if you get a home base in one place and travel slower trips there, like you can take bus trips to Bangkok for like $10 or $15. So it's very easy to get around or go to Laos or Myanmar for very cheap. if you have a home base and just do shorter trips from that home base, you can kind of get to a lot of places relatively inexpensively. So that's a good way to do it as well.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. And you've recently made the idea of social good and social responsibility a focus on your site. And I think that's a message a lot of people need to hear. What spurred you to start writing more openly about this idea of social responsibility that we should have?
I don't know. Like, I'm still kind of like wrestling with these ideas. Like, I've always been very business oriented. I studied business and economics in school. I was very business focused. I was growing my business. I'm not an environmentalist. I'm not like, I wouldn't say like I'm a whatever, like any kind of derogatory term you would call kind of those kind of people that I probably used many times in my life when I was younger. I wouldn't identify myself as those people, but it's kind of insane just what we're doing to the planet, I think. Especially if you travel and you live and you see how poor people are, like there are people that are like, there are 2 million refugees living illegally in Thailand. Thailand has tens of thousands of people in permanent detention centers, like in cages and in jails, that'll never, ever be able to get out because they're not going to find amnesty in any country. They can't claim refugee status. They don't have any identification in their country. So it's just unimaginably horrific, their lifestyle, right? The everyday kind of torture, the amount of people that are trafficked for sex trade or forced labor in the region is just horrific compared to like first world problems. Most people that you see, they're worried about, oh, they can't afford to buy a new car yet, or they don't have enough money for the latest iPhone update and stuff like that. And it's pretty superficial, kind of stupid things. It's really hard for me to actually go back to Canada or America because I just don't have anything in common with this consumption-oriented lifestyle there anymore. So I think we just need to wake up. Like the one way that I describe it, if the whole world lived like an American or a Canadian, there's the common idea that we would need 5 planets of resources to pay for it all. So if you think of that, and if you believe that, and I think it's true, I don't know exactly the amount, but I would know it would be a lot because obviously we consume and waste and pollute a lot. We're the most polluting and wasteful people on the planet, Canadians and Americans, and Canadians even more so because it's colder and we have to use more resources. But there's 2 things you can get out of that. That means like either we need to drastically cut back our consumption to be fair with the rest of the world, right? Like obviously not everybody can consume like we do. So if we're going to be fair, we have to have this kind of average level that's sustainable, right? And we're way past that. We're probably like we're consuming probably like 5 or 10 times too much to bring that average into thing. So one way is like we drastically curtail our consumption. Or the other idea, if we don't believe that we have to curtail it, that means we're better than everyone else, and everyone, only the other people have to keep their consumption down. Because we're special and we're the best people in the world, so only we are allowed to consume lots, and everyone else has to be a subsistence level of consumption to keep the planet in balance, right? Both of those ideas are a little crazy to me, right? Like that we should be allowed to consume a lot and other people shouldn't be, right? I've read that in the next 5 years, there's going to be an extra like 500 million Chinese, Russian, and South American tourists coming on board, right? Middle-class income people that want to travel and that want the house and want the car and want the giant flat-screen TVs, right? And that's going to all put incredible burdens on the planet. And the worst thing is that, like, from my experiences, buying all that stuff is not going to make you happier, more fulfilled, more satisfied. It's only going to add stress and hassles and problems to your life. It's actually the simpler life where you focus on what you really value doing. Like, people don't want a big house and a big TV and big sofas and cars. What they want is time to spend with their family and they want a secure lifestyle. And the thing is, everything we're convinced to buy and do takes us away from brings us the most satisfaction in our life. We've been sold this idea from marketers trying to sell us stuff, right? Everybody wants, if people will convince us to do anything if they're trying to sell us something, right? We need to understand that we're always being sold. Like, the person that has that make money online program doesn't have our best interests in heart. They have our dollar signs in their mind, right? And so their goal is to sell us something that's going to make them the most amount of profit. And when that Coca-Cola wants you to drink more Coca-Cola, it's not because Coca-Cola is good for your health. It's because it's their business and they need to sell more. So they'll do anything to make you feel more aligned with the brand and feel more part of their kind of image and their part of their business. And so it's in companies' best interest to get us to buy as much as possible. But we also have to understand it's not in our interest or the planet's interest to keep consuming like mindless robots.
Yeah, and I think that's really neat to hear you say it because, like you said, you have a business mindset. You've grown a business. You know, you're not someone who's out there, I will say tree hugger or whatever it is. Yeah, an environmentalist who's only ever thought about that. You're someone who came to that realization because you've traveled, because you've seen kind of the disparity between what we so easily have and what so many people in the world couldn't even imagine having. And I think that that really is sometimes the essence of travel. It expands your mind. You know, you choose whether to go and do something about it or whether to go back to your comfortable lifestyle. And I'm not advocating that people can't have comforts and they can't have their homes and stuff like that. But I do think that when you travel, it forces you to take a step back. As long as you're going to different places that are different from your home country, you can't really push aside the fact that you have more than most other people. Obviously, especially you've learned that being in Thailand for so long.
Yeah, like travel does open your mind. I think you have to want to have your mind open. You need to be at a certain stage of your life. And unfortunately, I don't think most travelers are there. Like if you see everywhere you go in the world, like the travel focused areas, they sell like hamburgers, pizza, Mexican food, and they have karaoke and they have bars and techno music and live karaoke shows every night and things. All these travelers are coming to get more of what they had back home, just cheaper, right? It's sad that people don't really take the opportunity to enjoy the local culture very much.
What are some ways that you found that people can make small changes but have big impacts? Because it doesn't always have to be this monastic lifestyle or anything like that, but what are some small changes that people could make to really make an impact, but it doesn't affect them too much?
Well, what I would say is like, don't even think about changing the world. You don't have to change the world. What I would say is like, be selfish and focus on what brings you the greatest satisfaction and happiness in your life, right? And I can guarantee you, if you spend any time thinking about that, it's not your possessions, it's not your car, it's not your fancy gear, right? And the thing is, most people don't think that. They think that they care, number one, about their family, but they're spending 60 hours a week in the office and another hour each way commuting, and they're buying fancy clothes so they can go to the office and look good, and they're buying an expensive car so they can look good with their peers and neighbors. All the stuff they're doing is actually keeping them from their family and keeping them from what they most enjoy, right? So we tell ourselves these stories, but it's more of like a marketing fiction, I think. The three big ones that I say over and over again, number one is health. If you don't have your health, you can't do anything else. If you, for example, if you're out of shape and you are overweight, or you die 10 or 15 years young because of your obesity, or you have diabetes and you have to worry about that for the rest of your life, all these things, these are self-inflicted kind of first world problems. If you don't have your health, you don't have anything. And so if you're not taking care of your health every day, you should be like that. That should be the number one priority, like a healthy, active life that gives you energy and you're not feeling depressed and lazy will massively increase the quality of life and everything else. The second one is your relationships, right? If you're not spending time with your family and your friends and connecting with other humans at a meaningful level, not just the superficial waving to the neighbor when you drive out of the garage every morning, if you're not connecting with people, like what's the point of being on the planet, right? Like we're social animals, right? If we're not here to connect with others, like it's kind of a sad existence. So if you're sacrificing your connections because you got to work and make money and buy more stuff, I think you're missing the point of what a life is, right? And the last one is like, everybody talks about making a difference and doing good in the world and blah, blah, blah. We don't really take action on it. Everybody says, yeah, I'd like to contribute more, but I got to worry about myself first, or I got to work. And when I get to this stage, when I do this, then I will volunteer, then I will do that. But for me, like it's all about contribution. Like at the end of the day, we're going to look back on our lives and say, did we make a difference or did we not make a difference? And it's not make a difference in kind of like, oh, I wrote a blog and I convinced people to buy my Make Money Online program and I help people. Those are like pretty superficial kind of like self-serving kind of make a differences relative to like the number of people in the world that don't have clean drinking water or caught in the sex trade or suffering in refugee camps around the world or displaced because of military conflict, right? The way most people talk about making a difference is pretty superficial and basically bullshit. We're sold these ideas, but it's basically bullshit. Like, you're not making the world a better place if you're selling more high priced luxury consumer goods or selling stupid information products that you know most people are not even going to finish reading, never mind take action on, right? We tell ourselves we're making a difference, but it's not. But like, but meaningfully connecting with people and making a difference doesn't mean going to like Africa and digging wells. It could just mean being nice to your neighbors and picking up garbage on the street in front of your house and not driving your SUV to Walmart to load up on cheap plastic stuff made in China all the time, right? Like, I think if we just like act in our own interest, I think we would see quickly like there's a better path to go. And I tell people, just be selfish. Do what you really want to do, right? Just think about it. I think we're just not aware of the choices we're making. If anybody, it's impossible for a rational person to consume the way we consume. It's just that most people never examine their life and they haven't gotten beyond that kind of childish consumption phase.
Yeah, and John, I think your honesty and your desire to push yourself towards new goals and just kind of new ways of thinking and evolving from one to another, they really truly are an inspiration. And I want to thank you again for coming on the show. And before I let you go, I want to know what you have in the pipeline that people should be looking out for, either personally or professionally, and remind people one more time how they can come connect with you online.
Well, my main site is jetsetcitizen.com, and you can find me through there. John@jetsetcitizen.com is my email address. Actually, like I do a lot of nonprofit stuff now because that kind of definitely gives me, it doesn't make me any money, but it definitely is the most rewarding kind of work I do. So when I see the impact you can make from doing that kind of stuff, that is really why I want to focus my energy. But in terms of a project, like I'm working on a social entrepreneur community that I'm hoping to kind of help like nonprofits and activists. Basically, I want to do a kind of like capacity building for the people that are actually making a productive difference in the world. And I think there's a small number of those people in the world, but it's growing very quickly. I call it a great awakening, whereas more people kind of see that our way of life is not the future doesn't look very good if we continue on this path. It's not too hard to extrapolate out 5 or 10 or 20 years and realize that if we keep doing the same things just faster, we're not going to be going in a very good direction. So I think there's, obviously, there people are waking up to this all over the world. It's not like I'm the only one that sees this. So it's happening. It's just that we need it to become mainstream, and it's not anywhere near mainstream yet. So I just want to be part of that change and have that community and connect with those kind of people more deeply. My direction is going to be more social entrepreneur and nonprofit and kind of activist focused.
Yeah, very cool. And like John said, you can find him at jetsetcitizen.com. All the stuff is linked up. We'll link that in the show notes. And John, thanks again for coming on. You know, I know it's early for you. I know it's maybe this is a good way to kickstart your day and continue to enjoy Chiang Mai.
Thank you very much, Travis. Thanks for having me on here. It's great to share my story and talk to you again.
My pleasure. Hey guys, if you like what you heard with John today, make sure to check out his website, jetsetcitizen.com. He goes into depth, a lot more in depth than we did even on this podcast, about becoming location independent, how he was able to flip his life around, why he flipped his life around, became location independent, and also talks about the true costs of what it is to live abroad. And breaks down his budget month to month sometimes and really gives you an inside look at what it costs to live abroad. So if you're interested in that, if you're interested in location independence or even living abroad for an extended period of time, jetsetcitizen.com is an awesome resource. Go check it out. Lastly, if you're listening to a travel podcast, that probably means that you want to travel more, and I want to help you do that. And the easiest way for me to help you travel more while spending less is for you to go over and sign up for the Extra Pack of Peanuts email newsletter. And you can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. By signing up for the newsletter, you'll be getting email updates anytime we put up a new podcast, as well as anytime we put up a new post to the site. You're also going to get our free copy of Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire, which is going to set you on the path of how to start acquiring frequent flyer miles and really start traveling around the world for next to nothing. So extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You can sign up for our email newsletter. You can stay abreast of everything that's happening in Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I can help you start to travel more while spending less. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. I'll see you next week. And until then, happy free travels.